Today, the latest on credit growth, CPI, and other things. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest posts covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And as it's the last day of the month, we have credit data from both APRA and the RBA, and the ABS also released their CPI statistics. And in addition, we've got some other market intelligence too, so a lot to get through. And to start the journey, we're going to look at the data from APRA. It's the monthly banking statistics, which gives us the total loan portfolios of all the major lenders in Australia. So investment lending rose by just $64 million last month to stand at $0.557 trillion. And that's a rise of 0.012% over the month. Owner-occupied loans rose by 0.188% over the month to stand at $1.13 trillion. And if you add those two together, the total outstanding is $1.688 trillion. And that's an uplift of $2.1 billion over the month. And that would represent a 1.6% annualized lift. So you can see that there has been very little momentum from lending, specifically for investors, this time around. And it's also worth noting that the proportion of loans for investment purposes continues to fall and now stands at 33.05%. Now, another way of looking at the data is the percentage changes month on month. And for that, the market grew overall at just over 0.1%. Owner-occupied lending grew 0.19%. And investment loan grew ever so slightly. And you can see, therefore, that from the point of view of the major lenders, credit momentum continues to ease. And of course, this is now June, which was after the election, and when all the talk about lower interest rates was in train. So far, there is no evidence of a credit growth rebound amongst the major lenders. So we can also look at the market shares across the lenders. And in the owner-occupied sector, CBA is still the biggest lender, followed by Westpac. NAB and ANZ follow them. And then we have a series of smaller lenders with smaller shares. On the investment side, Westpac still leads the way, followed by CBA. And again, the other two major lenders follow. And then we have a whole selection of smaller banks following on. But the most interesting way of looking at this is actually to look by loan portfolio by lender in dollar terms. And we can see that this time around, Westpac grew both their own occupied, that's the blue, and their investment lending portfolio. Commonwealth did the same. National Australia grew their owner-occupied portfolio, but not their investment portfolio, whereas ANZ saw both sides of the house drop considerably. Amongst the smaller lenders, there were small rises at Suncorp and the Bank of Queensland, but Bendigo and Adelaide Bank fell. ING almost no change. HSBC was positive. Macquarie Bank was positive on both owner-occupied and investor lending, but Members Equity Bank dropped both, and AMP also saw a fall in their overall portfolios. Now, the other way we can look at it is the year-on-year growth across the banks. And of course, there was that old 10% speed limit, which is pretty redundant, but it's quite interesting just watching the way that this has developed. Essentially, some of the smaller lenders, such as HSBC and Macquarie, are right up there in terms of loan growth. At the market level, investor lending was zero or just below zero over the last 12 months. And you can see that a couple of the majors, like National Australia Bank, for example, and ANZ Bank, are down in the negative territory. So overall, they have continued to drop their loan portfolio for investor loans over the past 12 months. So now let's turn to the RBA monthly aggregates, again to June 2019. And of course, this includes both the major banks and also the non-banks. And the data shows that overall credit for housing on the 12-month basis has continued to fall. It's now well below 4%. Within that, owner-occupied housing growth again is slowing and is sitting now at 4.9% on an annualized basis. That's the slowest it's been for a very long time. Investor lending continues there as well at very low levels, an annualized growth level of 0.5%. We can also see that credit for other personal needs, in other words, credit card debt and personal loans, continues to slide with an annual growth rate or reduction over the last 12 months. Business credit also continues to slide a little and is now standing at an annualized 4% growth level. And that puts total credit over the last 12 months at 3.3%. And that's the low it has been for as long as we've been tracking the data. Finally, I'll just highlight that broad money on the 12-month ended basis is still quite strong relative to where we were around the start of the year. And that may be some reflection of some quantitative easing going on behind the scenes. So the RBA also provides credit aggregate data to the end of June 2019 on a seasonally adjusted basis. And the total value of owner-occupied loans stood at $1.23 trillion at the end of June. And that was a rise of 0.24% over the month, or $3.01 billion. Investment lending stood at $0.59 trillion and was down 0.05%, or down $0.31 billion, so almost no change. Personal credit was $145.5 billion and slid again, down 0.25% over the month, and that was down $0.36 billion. And lending for business stood at $962 billion, up 0.41% over the month, and that was equal to $3.96 billion. Now, it's worth noting that once again, we see the proportion of household credit for investment purposes continuing to fall. It's now at 32.4%. And the quantum of lending for business was 32.7%, again, the same as last month. And you can see that it's been holding its own for a couple of months, but is lower than it was 2 or 3 years ago. So demand for business credit remains quite constrained. Now, there's another way to look at this data, and that is to split out the non-bank mortgage lending from the bank lending. And we can do that firstly by showing the ADI, or bank, owner-occupied and lending trends again. We've already shown that data today. But now let's overlay the non-bank sector. So that's everything that is not a bank. And the non-bank annual owner-occupied lending has grown by 14.5%. And the non-bank annual investor lending has grown by 8.5%. And that puts total non-bank lending just around 10 or 11%. So you can immediately see the continued strong growth in the non-bank sector, and they are continuing to do some of the heavy lifting despite the recent changes in the system. Now, my point has always been and continues to be that many of these non-banks are potentially lending near prime rather than prime loans, and I don't think that the supervisory structures for them are as strong as they need to be. So there are risks continuing to build in the system, in my view. So in conclusion, you can draw from this that the credit data is simply showing no improvement. And as you know, I continue to argue that it's the rate of change of credit that fundamentally drives home prices. So as a result of that, it's no great surprise to see almost no change in home prices over the month of July, just a very, very slight lift in some centres. But the credit data is quite clearly showing that so far the credit impulse is continuing to weaken, and that's why I continue to believe that we will see weaker home prices ahead over the next 12 months or so, rather than stronger ones. But again, we'll see the data next month. If credit really starts to pick up, then we may change our modelling. But currently, we don't need to. We think we've got it pretty spot on. Now, next, I'm going to move on to talk about the CPI data, which also came out today. Now, we're going to look each time at both the last quarterly data and also the data over the last year to give us an annualized number. So you can see there that food and non-alcoholic beverages were down in the quarter, but is standing at 2.4% over the last year. Alcohol and tobacco rose 1.1% over the last quarter and was 5.9% higher over the last 12 months. Clothing and footwear rose 1.6% over the last quarter and annualized is 0.2% because there were falls earlier in the year. Housing costs were down 0.2% over the quarter. That's an important number because this is the first quarterly fall for the housing group since the March quarter of 1998. And it's being driven by lower electricity and gas prices, weak housing market conditions, and increasing rental vacancy rates in some capital cities. In fact, the main contributors to the fall in the housing group are electricity, down 1.7%, gas and other household fuels, down 0.5%, and new dwellings purchased by owner-occupiers, down 0.2%. But housing over the year still grew by 0.5%. Furnishing, household equipment and services rose 0.7% in the quarter, but dropped 0.4% over the year. Healthcare costs rose 1.8% in the quarter and 3% over the year. Transport costs rose 3.4% in the quarter, and that's a considerable rise. And what's interesting there is that the main contributor to the rise in the transport group was automotive fuel, which was up 10.2% as rising world oil prices flow through to consumers. And automotive fuels rose in February, up 4.2%, March 5.2%, and April 5.7%, and May 1.7%, but fell in June 4.8%. Here is a plot of the average price of unleaded petrol, 91 octane, in cents per litre. And you can see how the prices have moved in recent times. And motor vehicles were up 1.4%, and that also contributed to the rise, with new motor vehicle models entering the market at higher prices. On an annualised basis, therefore, transport stood at 1.7%. Communication costs fell in the last quarter and dropped even further over the last year. The main contributor to the fall is telecommunication equipment and services, which were down 1.3%. Recreation and culture was up 0.6% in the quarter and 1.8% over the year. Education was flat in the quarter and up 2.8% over the year. Insurance and financial services rose 0.3% over the quarter and were up 0.9% over the year. And all groups over the quarter were up 0.6%. And that gives us a 1.6% annual growth in inflation, which of course is still well below the Reserve Bank's target range of 2 to 3%. So you could argue from this data that the monetary policy is again not working as it should. And just to round that out, all groups CPI seasonally adjusted rose 0.7%, the trimmed mean rose 0.4%, and over the 12 months to the June quarter, the trimmed mean rose 1.6%, and over the 12 months, the weighted median rose 1.2%. following a revised rise of 1.4% over the 12 months to the March quarter 2019. So, however you look at it, inflation is not a problem at the moment. Although I have to say that the very high transport costs are coming through in our financial confidence surveys as one of the strong negative indicators. And of course, housing costs are substantially underrepresented in the way that the ABS does their calculations. Now let's look at the data across the major cities in Australia. So we'll start with Sydney, that was up 0.7% over the quarter and 1.7% over the year. Melbourne was at 0.5% and 1.3% over the year. Brisbane was up 0.6% over the quarter and up 1.7% over the year. Adelaide rose 0.5% over the quarter and was up 1.4% over the last 12 months. Perth rose 0.7% over the quarter and is up 1.6% over the last year. Hobart was up 0.6% over the last quarter and is up 2.3% over the last 12 months. That's a record. And Darwin was up 0.8% over the quarter and up 0.8% over the last year as well. Canberra was at 0.3% over the last quarter and up 1.7% over the last 12 months. And Australia overall, as we said already, was up 0.6% over the quarter and 1.6% over the last 12 months. And looking across those data sets, transport at 3.4% was driven by higher world oil prices and retail fuel margins, resulting in an increase in automotive fuel at 10.2%. And automotive fuel rose in all capital cities this quarter, ranging from Canberra at 1.7% to Sydney at an astonishing 11.7%. And healthcare costs were up 1.8% due to the cyclical increase in private health insurance premiums in the medical and hospital services, up 2.6% from the 1st of April. Medical and hospital services rose in all capital cities, ranging from Canberra at 1.8% to Adelaide at 3.8%. And in terms of negative contributors, food and non-alcoholic beverages were down 0.4%, driven by an improved supply of fruit and vegetables, with autumn and winter produce coming into season, and bananas returning to normal prices following adverse weather conditions in Queensland last quarter. Perth exhibited a smaller fall than the other cities due to localised drought conditions affecting fruit and vegetable supply. And housing was down 0.2%, which was driven by utilities, down 1%, new dwellings purchased by owner-occupiers down 0.2%, and continued weakness in rents, just around zero. Utilities fell in all cities, excluding Perth and Darwin, where there were small rises, and ranged from Hobart down 0.1% to Brisbane down 3.2%. So now, before I finish, let me just touch on two other important issues. Firstly, Genworth, the lender's mortgage insurer, reported their first half results today. And the most interesting thing is that delinquencies continue to rise. And they say that they're concerned about continued rises in Western Australia. But I also noticed that delinquencies are higher in New South Wales as well. And because Genworth is one of the few lenders mortgage insurers that is publicly listed separately, we get the best look at what is going on in the marketplace. And those rises in delinquencies are precisely in line with the DFA mortgage stress data as well. So I expect to see more bad news in terms of mortgage defaults ahead. The next thing just to touch on quickly is that building approvals were down again. We're seeing continued weakness, particularly in the high-rise sector. And there's no evidence yet of any turnaround there. That's another forward-leading indicator of more stresses and strains in the housing sector. And of course, that's also going to put downward pressure on employment prospects or rising unemployment, because already we're seeing more construction workers out of work. And finally, before I go, there is a very important issue I need to share with you. On Friday, after 5 p.m, the Treasury released a discussion paper and draft legislation relating to anti-money laundering rules, which will essentially restrict the use of paying for goods and services by cash above $10,000. Now, on one hand, you could say, well, that's reasonable, isn't it? Because it's to do with the black economy and anti-money laundering. But there is more going on here, because what this is doing is effectively pushing more transactions into digital form. And it really is laying the foundations to be able to control the economy ahead of introducing negative interest rates. And just to make that picture a bit clearer, there was a discussion paper published by the IMF a couple of months ago, which went into painful detail about how this needs to be done. Because essentially, in a negative interest rate environment, people are going to hoard cash unless there is a penalty for so doing, or unless it's hard to do. Essentially, if regulators and central banks want to take interest rates into strong negative territory, they have to be able to control the cash in the economy. And therefore, this draft legislation is much more worrying than it may first appear. Now, if you want more details about this, John Adams and I made a separate post on the Interests of the People channel, and I'll put a link below for that. Because there is an opportunity to lobby your MP and indeed make a submission ahead of the consultation, which is going to close in about 2 weeks, a very short period of time. But I want to underscore again that this is another step in the war on cash that I've discussed several times on this channel. And it's also part of the preparation for more unconventional monetary policy, which will mean savings will be diluted, negative interest rates will likely come in. And evidence around the world suggests that even with low interest rates and negative interest rates, this monetary policy probably won't be that effective in any case. So it's really important to get across this. And I do recommend that you look at our long show. It's 45 minutes, but I think it's worth watching. I think you'll be concerned and surprised. And just to give you a flavour, here is a short extract. Martin North, John Adams, in the interest of the people. So, John, it's come to this.
It has come to this. So earlier this year, we did a show called A War on Cash is a War on the People. And now we have some big news to break about what our government is now doing on this war on cash. So this is why we've called the show the Prime Minister ScoMo declaring a war on the Australian people, because the war on cash was launched last Friday. The Treasury has released a draft piece of legislation plus a draft regulation imposing this ban on transactions above $10,000.
And I think it's worth underscoring that this impacts cryptocurrencies, it impacts the value of money. Mm-hmm. As you say, it links back to negative interest rates and monetary policy.
That's right.
And it fundamentally recrafts some thoughts around the way that money will work in practice. And it's also worth us highlighting that there are basically open doors in this so that they can actually then change it again later by regulation.
Yes.
Which means that once they've actually got this piece of legislation in place, not only have they put the first stage in, but they've got all the doors open there just to continue this journey.
So the exposure draft bill and the regulation is now published on the Treasury website. They have called for feedback from citizens and particular parties up until the 12th of August.
Yeah, and I think it's also, viewers might want to actually lobby their MPs.
And
actually,
absolutely.
And actually, you know, ask them questions about this, because I'm betting you that most MPs will have no idea about this at all. So in the interest of the people, we need to make sure that people understand what's happening.
Yep.
And it's not too late to have a voice.
Indeed. The thing is, like, the Australian people only have 6 weeks to stop their government from doing something crazy. And so I think this is very critical.
So there you have it. You're bang up to date with all the major issues that are going on. And I'll be back next time with more comment and content relating to finance and property across Australia and beyond. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.